Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And just before we start, a quick reminder that tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. Sydney time, we'll be running our next live stream event. And the topic will be investing in uncertain times. And I'll be joined by Damien Klassen from Nucleus Wealth. So join us at 8 p.m. and you can ask a question live as we explore the ins and outs of investing at the moment. And I'm joined again by Edwin Almeida, our property insider. Hi, Edwin.
Hello, Martin. How are you going?
Yeah, pretty good. Or should I say troublemaker?
Trouble's my middle name, Martin. Didn't you know that?
Well, it seems to be. Wherever you go, you cast doubt and fear and all sorts of funny things.
Well, all's fair in love and attending auctions, they say. You know what? That's the same, isn't it?
Well, you posted on Twitter a pretty hilarious excerpt, which we might play, actually, because it's just so funny.
Stunning home. What's that, $3 million, sir?
If you get rid of the noise in the back, yeah, I'll give you three.
Oh, sir, noise. the very fact that you're so far from me, I can hear that $3 million beer that echoes the quietness of the location.
What was that?
Where would you like to start, sir?
2-4.
2-4. Now, sir, I've been booked for 6 weeks to conduct this auction. Please don't tell me I've been waiting 6 weeks to come along and start that far under the guide
and
price.
And I've been booked for five.
I've
been booked for 5 weeks to. I've been booked for 5 weeks to buy
it today, sir.
My buyer doesn't want to pay more than that.
I'm sure they don't. I've never met a buyer that wanted to pay more, and never met a vendor that didn't want to sell for less, sir. So let's get down to business. Where do we see it going? Dave, I'll probably take a rest on the 2-4. I don't think we can start the bidding at $2,400,000. I'd be offending most of the neighbours here if we started the bidding there. Where do we see it go? Dave, I shouted something a little bit silly. Maybe it was a bit crazy, that $3 million start, but surely there's something in between there. 2-4 and $3 million make perfect sense to me. We won't be starting at $2,400,000, ladies and gentlemen. Just sit patient. First call, no bids to get us underway. Stunning block of land, sir, so close to that wonderful Wurunga Village field of vibe. Where do we see it going?
But what's the context of it?
Well, look, we've been looking at this property. Clients of ours from Queensland have been looking at this property in this area for about 5 weeks now. And obviously, it's not just a on the day thing. We've been doing a bit of research and background research, talking to the agents, prepping the agents as to why they should take our reasoning as opposed to their high expectations. They were trying to get close to 2.8 on the day. They thought they had a few players in, and at the end of the day, it was just ourselves and the auctioneer wanted to do a bit of showing off to the local to the locals, and unfortunately, it came out with a black eye.
Yeah, just a bit off on price, eh?
Well, yeah, that's right. Look, it's interesting. The reserve was $2,750,000. I did make a pre-auction offer on behalf of my client, and obviously, yeah. Then they thought that they invited me in their arena, and I took them on. So they were expecting me to lead with my pre-auction offer on behalf of my client, and they weren't expecting $150,000 lower than my pre-auction offer. So, yeah, look, you got to play the game. You've got to play the game as it stands. You've got to, and I said it takes a bit of preparation. We're able to, as the agents say, when they deal with their vendors, they condition the vendors. Well, we like to condition the agents. Use the same strategy. At the end of the day, they wanted a sale. We wanted a purchase, and unfortunately, in this case, and let me say frankly, my owner was prepared to pay a lot more than what we ended up paying. But the agent's pockets got in the way of the vendor's best service, and therefore we won out. And unfortunately, the loser was the vendor. But hey, I'm not here to make money for the vendor. I'm here to assist my, you know, our clients on our way. So it was, look, it was fun. And look, it's something that people shouldn't be afraid to take on the norm, and it's really going against the grain. I mean, look, if Trump can do it, we can do it as well. You know, it's not over. It's all over until we go to the courts, Martin.
fair enough. But it was interesting that, you know, he did make the point. Well, of course, the vendor always wants a higher price. The people are buying always wants a lower price. I mean, that's obvious, you know, obvious and straightforward. But it's interesting, isn't it? The process of getting that meeting of the minds is actually what it's all about, really.
Yeah, look, I thought we had a pretty close meeting of the mind, and we could have negotiated. Quite frankly, he just wanted to show off in front of those that contracted him, and quite frankly, I think did a disjustice to the neighborhood. He kept on quoting my offer. Yeah, if I start at 2.4, it'll be an insult to the neighbors. Well, you keep on mentioning 2.4, and you keep on insulting the neighbors. So in their mind, they got in their head that they wouldn't have sold for much more than that. And look, I'm sure the neighbors knew what the vendor's expectation was. As I said, it was 2.75. That was the reserve, but they were quite expecting to get on or above 2.8. And look, we did come to an agreement at the end. We bought the property on behalf of our client. Our client was static, put close to $100,000 in his pocket. More than what he, yeah, less obviously in his pocket, based on what he was prepared to spend. And look, and this goes to the argument that I've had for many years when I was on the other side, and that is that the auction campaigns aren't necessarily the best way to achieve the best price for your vendor. And I see it more and more based on the fact that what our clients are prepared to pay and based on what we can get it on the day of auction or after. And that is that if you give buyers the time to do the research and to do what's troubling a lot of buyers at the moment, Martin, and that is the valuations. I know a lot of agents say, oh, yeah, but the valuation will come in because it's a big property, it's a great property, it's this and that. But as I keep on reminding the selling agents, and that is, the valuations aren't necessarily based on the property itself as much as it is based on the strength or the borrowing capacity of the borrower. And that's where a lot of the banks are making the decision whether or not it comes on a contract price, or they put an emotional caveat or baseline and value down. So this, you've got to be careful when you're buying at auction these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you've always got to be careful of auctions because, of course, you get sucked away sometimes and get caught up in the moment and then live to regret it later. And I have to say that I sometimes wonder who really wins in the auction context, what with, I guess, the agents taking a bigger fees because it's an auction sale, and they often get extra fees, right? So that effectively the advertising and other things beforehand. And I don't think you always necessarily get the optimal result.
Now, look, it is one of those things that there are arguments for and there are arguments against, but it comes back to the individual property and the position that the vendors are in as to what you do. But look, right now, we're on the buyer side and acting for the buyers, and we do what we do because we understand the game. Buying and selling property is very adversarial, so you've got to have the right person in your corner, as they say.
Well, it is a game. I think that's a very good thing to score with people, right? And I think that sometimes play it like a game is probably a good idea. Now, you threw up a couple of articles for us to discuss today, and I think the first one is a really important one because it relates to the question of merchants and what's happening to a lot of commercial properties.
Look, that's right. We've talked a lot about residential. We've talked about the residential market, and I think it's about time we continue explore a little bit more with regards to the commercial side of things and what's happening. The rest of the world seems to know. And this article, obviously, it's from our friends on NetEase and how the rest of the world are looking at us, looking at our commercial space, looking at our business sector and what's happening with all the all the stop valves that the government is throwing in, all the stimulus that the government's throwing in and keeping this whole zombie economy afloat. But if the rest of the world, can see what's happening, but yet we fail to see what's happening, Martin. And this is where you and I keep on saying that there's the dust is yet to settle on a lot of things before we can really gauge and see what's going to happen with properties. We know that there's a shifting sand of with regards to the the demographics and also the asset classes or what people are investing in. We know there's a shift from apartments to houses. We know all this in some areas are finding a flaw, but as to how strong those flaws are going to be is yet to be determined. And I guess if the rest of the world can see what's going on, we're so insulated that we fail to see the reality. And I guess this article is predominantly about that, as to they're basically telling our potential or potential overseas investors what they're in for if they do choose to come into this market.
Yeah, and that article, of course, again, is from China, right?
That's correct. It's keep in mind it's a global platform, and it is, and this platform is listed on the American exchange. So it's one of those things that it's not just local to mainland China. It does have a very broad and wide reach, and what they point out, it's no different to what you've been talking, you and Tarek have been talking about for months now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is the point, isn't it? That sometimes we can get a bit trapped into just a local way of thinking, but sometimes that broader perspective can be quite helpful. And they do go into some detail, don't they, with regard to what's going on?
Look, they do. And I guess when you, as you say, as you've coined the term, when you go real granular, you look at the areas that that they see that where it's going to face most of the stress is going to be experienced, and then we look back into what's the makeup of that in terms of property, and a lot of it is high density relying on tourism, relying not only retail but also heavily reliant on that overseas dollar. And you're going to have a lot of issues there with those high-rise developments and settlements. And on that note, Martin, I'd just like to also tell our viewers that there's about 800 to 1,200 apartments. I don't have the exact figure, but it's between 800 and 1,200 apartments that are about to settle, or they're coming to settlement in the St. George area over the next couple of months. That's going to be interesting to see what happens there when you've got so many, and let's see what the valuers do, what they say, and who actually settles, because that is a large amount of apartments that are coming to settlement within 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, very interesting. And the quote, it's just reading the quote, in terms of income and uncertainty, some families have returned to levels in the first month or two of the epidemic. Among them, one of the typical examples is Cronulla Canal, where the proportion of employees applying for JobKeeper is very high. After the subsidy was cut, Cronulla and Canal was listed as one of Sydney's five most financially affected areas. Gee, they're being very specific.
Look, they are. And how does that compare to the data that you have?
It's horribly resonant because, of course, in my modelling, I do include JobKeeper and JobSeeker as part of the input drivers to the modelling. So I agree. That the stress has been rising, and a lot of SMEs in that area are also in difficulty. So they're definitely calling it outright.
Yeah, look, I've been also talking to a number of agents in the Sutherland Shire in that area, and the what they are saying is that what they've had is a number of buyers from that would otherwise look at buying in the inner west and moving out further afield, which is the Sutherland Shire, because they can work from home and they've got the space and they're close to water, and it's a they feel it's a better environment to work from home. So they've had, again, it's a shifting sand mentality, the shifting sands of the population that's yet to settle. No different to the mountains. A lot of people are making a shift over to the mountains and securing great properties at great entry points in the mountains as well. So I guess it comes back to, you know, what we've discussed, Martin, is how soon is it going to be more viable to get back into commercial space, and how quickly are people going to get bored or frustrated by working at home or working longer hours for less pay, and all the other anomalies and all the other things that we're yet to find out as to how it's going to evolve by working from home. But the biggest thing is, of course, with that these articles raise is the unemployment levels, which, I mean, Tarek and yourself are just prolific in talking about it, but yet the mainstream don't want to hear it. Like Twitter and Facebook don't want to hear the fact that Trump was the elected president, but, you know, we yet to hear it go through the court process. And, you know, it's just one of those things, Martin. We're fighting against the mainstream.
I won't comment on the Trump US situation, but I certainly will comment on the local situation, and that is unemployment is set to rise. The RBA says so. My data says so. It's just more a question of how much and how you measure it. That's always the interesting question. But the quote that you've also included here, I think it's just worth going through that. At the same time, in areas around Botany Bay, the financial situation of residents in the area has also deteriorated due to the heavy reliance on Sydney airport-related work. So how much have JobSeeker and JobKeeper hacked, according to statistics in late September? JobKeeper's subsidy benefited 3.5 million workers. For employees who work more than 20 hours a week, it was reduced from $1,500 to $1,200 per week. And for other employers, it was reduced to $750 a week. So they are really, again, going into detail and spelling it out.
Look, they do. And yet our mainstream are preaching happy days, great confidence, the retail's on the rebound. But then again, as I keep on saying to a lot of my colleagues and associates and friends and neighbours and relatives, and that, of course, there's going to be a bit of a rebound in retail, because people aren't paying the mortgages. They're literally living rent free until the banks start calling in on the loans, and that's when the pain will start. So look, there's a lot of dust still. You know, there's a lot of economic dust storms floating around. Time will tell, and things aren't going to really show, or, you know, at a greater, in greater detail, in greater depth, until, as Tarek says, from March next year is when we're going to start to get an idea, and that's providing the government doesn't throw more at the economy, which we all know they will, and they'll try, but how much more, how effective it's going to be, only time will tell.
Well, that's, of course, the question. We'll know down the track. Now, interestingly, your second article was from the US, but it related to GPs retiring.
Yeah, I was reading, I've been reading further afield this week, and talking to my WeChat chatterers, they let me know that there's a, in the New York Times, there was an article with regards to a lot of medical professions closing up. And it was rather interesting because on top of that, in the discussions on the WeChat chatter, there's also been a lot of inquiry with regards to how easy it would be or how a lot of people can from Hong Kong, from America, from New York, that how they could migrate over to Australia. So it's an interesting thought, and it was just something that we picked up on, and we started asking ourselves, well, is there going to be a migration of highly skilled professionals over to Australia? Because quite frankly, Australia is looking pretty, and I've always said Australia is the best country in the world. And Sydney's perhaps one of the best cities in the world. And look, we're becoming very attractive destination to the medical profession, particularly in Commonwealth countries, and also in the US, where you know they could the pathway to obtaining PR is a lot simpler than a lot of other countries. So who knows, Martin? It was just something that I thought I'd throw in for our viewers to pine on and just to chew on for the week.
Well, this is interesting. I've had a number of people argue that migrants from Hong Kong will save the property market, and you know we'll have thousands and thousands of well cashed up people all coming back to live in Australia, and you know basically saying that will save the property market. I'm not quite so sure myself.
Look, I don't think it's as much as your everyday migrant that's going to come, and they're going to be very selective as to where they live. It's going to be highly skilled professionals, but let's not forget there's also going to be, and there has been, a lot of inquiry from expats that have are located to Singapore, Hong Kong, and albeit the States as well, and they've probably been there 10, 20, 15 years, Australia is becoming very attractive, to come back home to. There's going to be a in certain areas that we are seeing that are very competitive with regards to homes, but the apartment market is yet to feel any bottom, even in the areas where the homes are somewhat resilient or have been resilient over the last few weeks. Again, time will tell. I still think that I believe that there's going to be a continual supply of freestanding homes on the market, particularly the ones that that the retirees can't maintain anymore because they're really under a lot of pressure. And let's not forget that in a lot of these areas where the homes are desirable, like the Inner West, the North Shore, the Upper North Shore, the Northern Beaches, the Eastern Suburbs, a lot of these homes are 50, 60, 70 years old, Mark, and they need a lot of maintenance. They need a lot of maintenance, and I caution people that are going out there and paying silly dollars and getting emotionally tied up and getting conned by the selling agents as to what they should be paying pre-auction, during the auction or whatever. They really need to do the due diligence because there's a lot of issues, there's a lot of things that can go wrong with these homes because they are of an age where they need major repairs.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Edwin. The other point I'd make from my analysis is there's also another whole play here, and that is the subdivision and the redevelopment of, you know, larger plots and, in fact, perhaps older houses. I was doing some work over looking at northwestern Sydney, and the number of subdivisions and the number of, you know, villas that are now being built on what were established family home plots is remarkable.
Look, there was a site over in a potential site, land banking site in Lane Cove, and the thing is, it gets to a point where right now land is more valuable in many places than as a house and land, as an individual house and land, as opposed to a development site. And you've got to do the math. The councils have made it more attractive to knock down a lot of the older homes and subdivide them into duplexes or triplexes or amalgamate a couple of blocks and as you say, put some villas or townhouses on there. But you've really got to do the math. And construction isn't getting any cheaper. I'm hearing a lot of chatter as well with a lot of the tradespeople and small builders that we deal with. The material is getting harder to come by, and it's I feel construction is going to go. It's going to get more expensive, particularly if this whole thing with China keeps on playing out, where this tit for tat that we've got going with China continues to play out, supply is only going to dwindle and materials are going to get more and more expensive. So we're almost in a conundrum where a lot of our properties that are being sold at the moment in the more established areas, they are very old. The old fire roads, they're being renovated. They're due for a refit, a rejuvenation or the like. And materials are getting more and becoming more and more scarce. Labor is becoming, labor as well. We've had some issues with some trades because their laborers are stuck overseas still. In the bigger scale, from what I get from Sporty, as he deals with a lot of the bigger players with the subdivisions further out west, northwest, southwest, is that a lot of the trades, the contract work that they're doing, has been, in terms of pricing, has been reduced by about 20%. So once again, this JobKeeper is what's keeping a lot of people, even in the construction sector, afloat. Now, once we get to March next year, a lot of them have said that they're quite frankly going to be putting off a lot of the subcontractors and the people running the companies are going to go back on the tools because they just can't afford to keep them. So it's still very messy, Martin. It's still very, very messy. They're having some flaws in some areas, as we've said. But again, we're only going to see how stable those floors are going to be, how strong those floors are going to be when the next economic grenade gets thrown in.
Yeah, well, there's a few more grenades to come yet, so we've put the umbrellas up and hope they bounce off, I guess. Now, let's go to another topic, because I quite often get people asking about pest reports and inspection reports and, you know, what should I get and does it make a difference? You've got some specific points of view and some advice about the whole question of pest inspections and reports.
Look, I've never been a fan of taking the pest and building reports that the selling agents provide or the homeowners provide, because obviously they're going to be very subjective. As I say to a lot of the agents that I deal with, I trust them as far as I can kick the person that wrote it. And you only have to read when you read as many pest and building reports as we do, you see that it's just a cut and paste job, and they make so many mistakes. Secondly, they do have caveats. They do have a lot of protection, you could say. They won't move things. They won't really inspect the property the way that they should be. So my advice to property buyers, no matter where you're buying, north, south, east, and west, is get your own pest and building inspection done, and pay that little bit extra to get a thermal report with regards to termites as well. Now, years back, we used to pay $750 to $1,000 for thermal imaging to see whether or not there were active termites in walls, particularly where there was rising damp or moisture, or we saw, we had concerns. Well, nowadays you can get that done for about $200-$300 on its own, outside of the normal pest and building report. So my advice is, look, it's very important. Secondly, a lot of reports, they make general notations, and one of my bugbears is the notations that they make with regards to insulation, Martin. They'll write on the report, yes, it's got insulation, but 9 out of 10 or 9.5 or 9.9 out of 10 inspectors won't note whether or not it's loose fill insulation. And if it's loose fill, I mean, it's a very high chance that it could have asbestos, and you need to get that tested. That's outside of. But again, they've got so many caveats on the bloody report that you can't go back to them and say, look, you didn't tell me this and that. They say, yeah, look, I told you it was insulation, but I didn't have to disclose what type of insulation. So there's a lot of issues around that I find. Hence, for our clients, if they don't pass my sniff test with regards to the report, as well as our own inspections of the property, and then we get our professionals that will do a proper report for insurance purposes and future issues just to, you know, safeguard the purchase. Well, then, you know, I feel if you're going to be spending a million, or if you're going to be spending any kind of money for a property, whether it be 500, a million, 2 million, 3 million, that you just can't rely on those reports. You've got to get your own. Spend $1,000 if you have to and get proper reporting done so that you can just feel at ease.
Mm. Well, I think there's two points there, Edwin. The first is, you know, there may well be things disclosed which you need to know. And, you know, I always start from the assumption that you can't rely on anything that anybody else tells you. You need to get your own information and you actually have to try and figure out what's going on. The second is, of course, there are some basically comebacks. So if they basically, you know, fail to spot something obvious and it comes up later as an issue. Now, you say there are some caveats, but there is also some degree of extra protection, which I think can be worth it. But it's often a bit of a tempting just to skimp on the reports, I think, and that's probably a mistake.
Look, it is, and people get too emotional. And look, as I say, you can use the report, you can use your own report to get a better deal on the property, you know, to point out to the agent so that they can make the owners aware of you know, issues that weren't. That weren't disclosed in the reports that they obtained. So it's a real good a basis for to put together an argument as to why you want to pay the 1.5 as opposed to paying the 1.9 that the agent wants you to pay and so forth. So it's tools that tools and I'd say that, yeah, weapons that you can use against your adversary, and yeah, we do it. Not only for peace of mind, but it's just a negotiating a power that we then gain, as opposed to just relying on those reports that are provided, because then they've got the upper hand, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. No. Well, I bought a property some time ago in Sydney, and we got a report, and they made the point that the drains were actually going a really odd direction and through a neighbour's property, so we didn't necessarily have right of drainage. And so we actually negotiated sufficient to cover the costs of rerouting the sewerage, right? And that was quite a substantial saving that we made. And then we were actually able to correct that underlying issue, but we still came out on top as a result of it. But if we hadn't had that report, we would never have known.
Well, that's right. And you wouldn't have been able to negotiate. I'm not saying that you're going to walk away from the deal. You it's just when you get your own... report done, you're able to then obviously get professionals to quote on the work, and then you start from there as a basis of negotiation, and I find that to be one of the greatest tools to use, because look, most selling agents, they don't read the reports themselves. they wouldn't know how to read the report in the first place. And they don't know what it costs to get things done. So, look, it's just strategies. But as you said, Martin, it's something that you're able to negotiate. You're able to get a better deal. You save money, but you have peace of mind as well that you didn't have to do all that on top of paying the money that the agent or the owner wanted you to pay.
Absolutely. Well, talking of better deals, we should just revisit the Quakers Hill episode from last week.
Well, yes, that was an interesting scenario. What's happened there? What happened there is, as our viewers know, that Seven Bombala went to auction. They know the whole thing and what we were able to call them out on. So, as I said to our clients, our buyers, I said, look, it's not the only deal at hand. There'll be other options. So we looked further afield. When I say further afield, we just waited for more listings to come on the market in the area. And so we were able to secure a property that the property at Seven Bombala was three bedrooms, one bathroom, double carport. It was, fair for what we wanted to pay, but not what the owner wanted, the seven, as we said, the 730. But we were able to secure a four-bedroom house with a double lock-up garage, with a pool, two living areas, two bathrooms, and, you know, what, you know, somewhat, I would say, a better location for only, you know, $10,000 more than what they wanted for Seven Bombala. So, you know, we were wrapped with it. And this is something, this is a tip that I want to give our viewers, our audience. Don't look for the properties that are listed on the internet with a nice, glossy, shiny renovations. Don't pay for somebody else's renovations. Look for those properties that are badly presented on the internet, that have got really crappy photos, and that, you know, with a bit of elbow grease or simple renovations, you're able to get it to the position of the place where you want to be, and at the right price. So the similar properties in the neighborhood would have sold above the 800, 820, 830, and the reason why we were able to obtain it at the price that we did, Martin, was because they had tenants in there that didn't really look after the property, but a lick of paint and a good clean sorts that out. They had issues of getting people to inspect the property. The agents had issues. Two, coming up to Christmas, the agents wanted a quick sale, quick commission, and so, we pandered to all their needs. We're able to see through all the mess, and our clients got great potential. So, look around. Don't pay for somebody else's renovation if you can avoid it. Is the tip.
Yeah, great advice, Edwin. And I sometimes say to people, just remember, there will always be more properties, right? That's really important just to bear in mind. There will always be something else.
Yeah, well, that's correct, Martin. There's new. I'm not seeing the huge retreating listings at the moment. We do go back to the early 800s. So we're sitting around the 8,500. We have been... We haven't tipped over the 9,000 freestanding homes, but some suburbs have had more properties linger on market than a lot of others. Others clear out very, very rapidly. But look, there's just as many that get bought a place back on the market and even a little bit more. So it's, I think if people are just become patient and don't get pushed around by the selling agents, you'll get that better deal. I don't think at the moment that there's any need for panic. We know that there is going to be a wave of that shifting sands that we've been talking about, of people changing their investment asset classes from bank deposits to, starting new businesses to, just putting in secure investment with, homes, because they're getting a very good return. But then you start to look at other possibilities as well. The older three-story walk-up apartments that are dropping in price. Apartments, even there are some well-built high-rise apartments that are also becoming cheaper by the day. That could be a good entry point. You're no longer paying your $700,000 to get a two-bedroom apartment with water views in Wollongong. A friend of mine just bought one down there in Wollongong that were with water views, a two-bedroom, brand new, two-bedroom, two-bathroom, car space with storage that were being sold for $700,000, $720,000, $730,000. He just bought it for $570,000. It's going to get cheaper. His reasons for buying it at that price, that's his personal reasons. But apartments are going to get cheaper, and so it's just one of those things, Martin. Just be patient and take your time.
Yeah. The old adage, I think, is just chill, just relax. Just take it easy, study. Understand, get granular, all those things, but also don't jump You know, just don't be forced into something because you will probably live to regret it. And I still get some people talking about the fear of missing out. I would say the fear of missing out should not be on the radar at all at the moment. Not anywhere, even in those areas where prices are a little bit more buoyant. There'll be more properties.
Look, and just to put it in context, Martin, is the my personal clients, not talking so much for my associates, but my personal clients, they're in the, they're looking in the North Shore, in the Wurundjeri area as well as the West, and a couple in the Southern Shire. So these are I'm talking, yes, it's anecdotal evidence, anecdotal data, but it's, you know, I'm talking from experience. So I'm not saying that I'm not telling the people something that I'm not seeing myself. Obviously, we've got access to a lot more information. We've got access to a lot of tools. We've got access to a lot of data. We've got access to a lot of but that's because we're in the game, as they say. But with a little bit of patience, a little bit of care, our followers, our viewers can get that information. And as you say, and then get pushed around by the agents. Just because the auctioneer says he wants to start at 3 million doesn't mean that you have to that you have to listen to them. You know, like I said to that auctioneer on the day, you might want to, I'll give you 3 million if you get rid of the noise in the background, from the road in the background. Yeah, but as far as what we want to pay is we want to pay 2.4.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, Edwin, it's always refreshing to talk to you because, you're right in the middle of it. But the common sense that you speak is just tremendous. So thanks once again for your time today. And I guess we'll do it again next week.
Yeah, let's do it again. Let's see what mischief I get up to this week, Martin.
Well, I hope you create a lot because it's certainly amusing when you do. So make some more videos. We'll show them next week. And have a great week, Edwin.
Thanks, Martin. Likewise.
Cheers. So there you have it. More pearls of wisdom from Edwin. Always worth listening to him. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.